confession. I'm uncomfortable with lament. It doesn't sit well with my body. It's not because I don't recognize the inherent value of the physical body releasing its stress, or the spiritual being recognizing and naming its present injustice. I'm uncomfortable with lament because I grew up in a church, in a denomination that was uncomfortable with lament. You see, to recognize the present chaos and the injustice in your present realities would be to call into question the overreaching, overarching, and omniscient, omnipotent God who is in control of everything. So I grew up in a tradition that minimized present situations, that sought to explain away current realities, that looked to a distant heaven while ignoring the present hell. I grew up in a church that would take more offense that the president used the word shithole than that comment came from a heart that was stained with racism. I grew up in a church that would try to explain what Donald Trump really meant. So I'm uncomfortable with lament. But I don't know what to do. I don't get it. I don't understand. I watch as things unfold in social media, not just this week, not just this month, but going back months, going back years. I look at the statistics. I look at the statistics, the reality that 81% of people I grew up with are okay with this administration, are okay with this misogyny, are okay with this racism. I don't get it. They claim to follow the same Jesus. They read the same scriptures. They recite the same creeds. They utter the same prayers. And yet, how are we on two different sides of a chasm? I've had the honor of speaking in Dr. King events on this weekend for the last probably 7 years. I feel humbled. I feel humbled to be asked to speak on such a momentous weekend, to commemorate such a momentous historical individual. And today, as I was asked, and it was framed in lament, knowing that I'm not good at lament, I either slip into my old habits of minimizing the present reality and pointing towards a hopeful and beautiful future, or I go to the other end and I get very, very angry, and sometimes that's not helpful for anyone. So today I thought I would begin by reading excerpts from a lament that comes from one of my ancestors. The setting is Reidsville, New York, which falls right in the heart of the ancestral homeland of the Mohican people. It is 1854, and one of my direct ancestors, John Quinney, has been asked to come to Reidsville, New York on the 4th of July, Independence Day of 1854, and to give a speech recognizing their celebration and commemoration of independence. Let me set this again. John Quinney, in 1854, was settled on a small reservation 1,100 miles away from his ancestral homeland. It is the reservation that my family still lives on. 1,100 miles away from our ancestral homeland. And on the occasion of the celebration of the independence of this great nation, they ask this chief to travel back to his ancestral homeland, a land that he is no longer welcomed, cannot purchase land, cannot settle, and to give honor to their celebration. These are the words from 1854 of Chief John Quinney of the Mahicanu people. It may appear to those whom I have the honor to address a singular taste for me, an Indian, to make an interest in the triumphal days of a people who occupy by conquest or have usurped the possessions of my fathers and have laid and carefully preserved a train of terrible miseries to end when my race ceased to exist. That's his opening paragraph. But thanks to the fortunate circumstances of my life, I have been taught in the schools and been able to read your histories and accounts of Europeans, yourselves, and the red men, which instruct me that while your rejoicings today are commemorative of the free birth of this giant nation, they simply convey to my mind the recollection of a transfer of the miserable weakness and dependence of my race from one great power to another. My friends, I am getting old and have witnessed for many years your increase in wealth and power, while the steady consuming decline of my tribe admonishes me that their extinction is inevitable. They know it themselves, and the reflection teaches them humility and resignation, directing their attention to the existence of those happy grounds which the Great Father has prepared for all of his red children. In this spirit, my friends, as a Mahicanu, and now standing upon the soil which once was and now ought to be the property of this tribe, I have thought, for once and certainly the last time, I would shake you by the hand and ask you to listen for a little while to what I have to say. He then goes on to recount a 250-year history of interactions between the Mohican people, his ancestors, my ancestors, and the European settlers who came to shore. He spoke of a prophecy that foretold the arrival of a different race of people coming across the great waters. And he picks up the speech after explaining that prophecy. He says, 250 winters ago, this prophecy was verified, and the Mahicanu for the first time beheld the paleface. Their number was small, but their canoes were big. In the select and exclusive circles of your rich men of the present day, I should encounter the gaze of curiosity, but not such as overwhelmed the senses of the Aborigines, my ancestors. Our visitors were white and must be sick. They asked for rest and kindness. We gave them both. They were strangers and we took them in. They were naked and we clothed them. Your written accounts of events at this period are familiar to you, my friends. Your children read them every day in their school books, but they do not read, nor can any mind at that time conceive, and no pen record the terrible story of recompense for kindness, which for 200 years has been paid the simple, guileless Mahicanu. I have seen much myself. I have been connected with more. And I tell you, I know all. The tradition of the wise men is figuratively true, that our home at last will be found in the West. For another tradition informs us that far beyond the setting sun, upon the smiling, happy lands, we shall be gathered with our fathers and be at rest. Promises and professions were freely given and ruthlessly and intentionally broken. To kindle your fires was sought as a great privilege, and yet at that moment you were transmitting to your kings intelligence of our possessions by right of discovery and demanding assistance to assert your hold. Where are the 25,000 in number and the 4,000 warriors who constituted the power and population of the great Mahikanu nation in 1604? They have been victims to vice, disease, which the white men imported. Smallpox, measles, and firewater have done the work of annihilation. Diversions, divisions, and feuds were insidiously promoted between the several bands. They were induced to thin each other's ranks without just cause, and subsequently were defeated and disorganized in detail. It is curious, the history of my tribe in its decline in the last 2.5 centuries. Nothing that deserved the name of purchase was made. From various causes, they were induced to abandon their territory at intervals and retire farther inland. Deeds were given indifferently to the government by individuals for which title or no compensation was paid. The Indians were informed in many instances that they were selling one piece of land when they were conveying another and much larger limits. Should a particular band for purpose of hunting or fishing for a time leave its usual place of residence, the land was said to be abandoned and the Indian claim extinguished. To legalize and confirm titles thus acquired, laws and edicts were subsequently passed, and these laws were said to be then and are now called justice. What a mockery to confound justice with law! Will you look steadily at the intrigues, bargains, corruptions, and log rollings of your present legislatures and see any trace of justice? And by what test shall be tried the acts of the colonial courts and councils? Let it not surprise you, my friends, when I say that the spot upon which I stand has never been rightly purchased or obtained. And by justice, human and divine, it is the property of the remnant of the great people from whom I am descended. They left it in the tortures of starvation and to improve their miserable existence. But a cession was never made, and their title was never extinguished. My friends, your holy book, the Bible, teaches us that individual offenses are punished in an existence when time shall be no more. And the annals of the earth are equally instructive that national wrongs are avenged and national crimes atoned for in this world, to which alone the confirmation of existence adapts them. These events are above our comprehension, and for a wise purpose, for myself and for my tribe, I ask for justice. I believe it will sooner or later occur, and may the Great Spirit enable me to die in hope. John Quinney took his white host to the woodshed in 1854, and rightfully so. You see, they were under this illusion that simply living under the conformity of the law is equitable to justice. How do we get to that point? How do we get to that point? How do we, as followers of Christ, a leader who moved into an oppressive situation and usurped law in the pursuit of justice, how is that our God? And yet, we repeatedly hear from 81% of our brothers and sisters who claim to follow Christ, things like, if he would have just listened to the officer's commands, he would be alive. How do we explain away the words of a president going through the intricacies of diagramming a sentence. How the hell do you diagram a sentence and arrive that that is okay? How do we ignore the fact that if there are shithole countries, it is shitholes that we have dug? How do we watch those who march in the street, who raise their voice, who shut it down? How do we watch that? And yet, people I grew up with will say things like, Dr. King would be so embarrassed of them. Dr. King wouldn't do it that way. Excuse me, do you know Dr. King? You watch as a few hundred people shut down a freeway for a few hours and you say, Dr. King would never do that. Never mind the fact that Selma was shut down. An entire city was shut down by Dr. King. You watch as people of color organize boycotts of businesses to shut down white supremacist and racist organizations, and you say, Dr. King would never do that. Montgomery, Alabama was shut down by Dr. King. You don't know Dr. King. We have an epidemic in our country when it comes to Dr. King. Everybody loves the I Have a Dream speech, but we only remember a little bit of it. We only remember a little bit of it. We all want to join hands and get behind Dr. King's dream that one day black boys and black girls will join hands with white boys and white girls. We all get behind that dream. But we forget why he was even speaking in the first place. It's not to sell you on some future dream in which euphoria is laid out for all of us. Dr. King came to give voice to some present realities. Listen to his words. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note, insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promise of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. We can never be satisfied. As long as our bodies, heavy with fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the cities. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro's basic mobility is from smaller ghetto to a larger one. We can never be satisfied as long as our children are stripped of their adulthood and robbed of their dignity by signs stating for whites only. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and the Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. We don't get the happy dream on the hill unless we do the work now. Why Why is the legacy of Dr. King so twisted, sanitized, watered down? Why? It's the same reason 81% of our brothers and sisters, 81% of the people around this country whom we will break bread with shortly. Because it's easier to follow a dead Dr. King than it is a living Dr. King. It is easier to follow a dead Jesus than it is a living Jesus. My friends, we know how we got here. We know we got here through systems of white supremacy, through systems of marginalizations, through theft of land and theft of bodies. We know because our living scriptures tell us that our Jesus would seek better. Our Jesus demands us to do better. We know that our heroes like Dr. King, a living Dr. King, not a dead Dr. King, a living Dr. King demands better of us. I give charge to each and every one of you here in this room today and to anyone who is listening to my voice wherever it may land. The beauty of our country is that our presidency is not the ultimate seat of power for this country. I am. You are. It is as evident every time Mitch McConnell or Lindsey Graham pander to their base to preserve their seat. We hold the power. We have elections coming up in November, important elections. We owe it to the living legacy of Dr. King to make sure we do everything in our power to correct our path. John Quinney, my ancestor, concluded his brave speech, "I believe the Great Spirit will allow me to die in hope." My name is Jim Bear Jacobs. I am known by the spirits as Wichiape To Wishasha. I stand on this good earth, on this day, and these are my prayers. Aho, Matakwe Asun.
I want Jesus to walk with me. I want Jesus, the living Jesus, to walk with me. I want Jesus to walk with me.